This is The Edge with your hosts, Jonathan Von Tobel.
Wes Reynolds alongside as well. Second hour of the program. A lot to get to, a little bit more on Major League Baseball because World Series, of course, starts tomorrow. Cody Bellinger will play despite the fact that he dislocated his bleeping shoulder while celebrating a home run yesterday. But he will be in the lineup. Drew Martin, college football handicapper, will be at the bottom of the hour as well. But we open up this hour as we usually do here on Mondays. George Shihori, host of the PFF Forecast, nice enough to give us some time here today. And George, a little bit of breaking news. I don't even know what to do anymore, man. Like, if you're the Philadelphia Eagles, like, do you just, like, what do you do with your medical staff or whatever? Miles Sanders, he's done for 1 to 2 weeks. Zach Ertz is done for 3 to 4 weeks. Like, what is going on with this team? And by the way, we should note that as that news comes down, we go from 5.5 on the line for Thursday to 3.5, the Eagles being favored here. So some steam coming in that direction. But, like, what are you supposed to do if you're the Eagles at this point?
Man, it's been rough for them. I mean, this is like not just a 1 year thing. This is a 2-3 year thing. They continue to just get destroyed by the injury bug. And I mean, I'm a big proponent of the whole, like, your injury and medical staff, it matters. I mean, we've seen this in other organizations. We've seen it in other sports as well. You hear stories about teams that traditionally do not do a great job of rehabilitating guys. But this particular NFL season, I think you've kind of got to say, it's maybe a little more just being unlucky. I mean, the Niners have gotten absolutely decimated by injuries, and the Eagles are starting to get bit by it, equally here. I mean, Jalen Reagor's been out for a while. You've obviously got offensive line issues. That doesn't even talk about the whole Carson Wentz situation with whether he's recovered from the back or not. And this is an interesting one, man, because looking at this line last night and seeing, you know, 6, 6.5, it's like, you know what? I mean, the Eagles are banged up. Are they really that good of a team? Should they be almost a touchdown favorite against anybody? Everybody in the NFC East is not very good. And so I think this is a reaction to both that and the fact that the Eagles are pretty banged up. To me, Miles Sanders shouldn't make that huge of a difference. This is more about how closely bunched all of those bad teams are in the NFC East.
George, speaking of another injury, that being Baker Mayfield, one of the narratives on some of the Sunday morning NFL chatter shows we were hearing, Kevin Stefanski has a game plan to change his game plan to try to protect Baker Mayfield's ribs. I don't know how you do that against a defense like Pittsburgh's, but nevertheless, he is upgraded to probable. We did see Case Keenum come into the game yesterday. And of course, Case Keenum with the background with Kevin Stefanski, they work together in Minnesota. So there is at least some continuity there, but 3.5, pretty much market consensus laying at Cincinnati. We know that these guys played on Thursday night. I believe it was week two or week three, but they did play on Thursday night. Cleveland clearly outplayed Cincinnati, but Cincinnati got in the back door. But if you look at the yardage, it should have been an easy Browns cover. So now maybe bettors are prone to kind of play that going again. But at this point with Baker Mayfield, who just doesn't look good and is all kind of banged up, it's not necessarily just his ribs, his shoulder looked hurt in that game against the Colts and obviously again yesterday. Do you think at least in the short term, they're better off going with Case Keenum at this point?
Look, I was at a small wedding on Saturday, and I told everyone that would listen, because, you know, they go, oh, you work in football, talk, who do you like this week? And I was like, I have not placed more money on any single bet than I have on the Pittsburgh Steelers. And a lot of it was for that reason. I thought the matchup there for Baker Mayfield was atrocious. He's hurt. You can tell that he's not confident. His PFF grade is worse this year leading into that game than it was all of last year when, you know, everyone thought he was a total catastrophe. You saw in that game where the Pittsburgh Steelers get pressure about 10% more frequently than any other team, how his confidence went from not great to completely outside of the state of Ohio, right? It was just not there. Like, there was, you could not find or wherever the heck they were playing, right? Pennsylvania. It was not there for him. And you can see that in his downfield throws. His throws 10 plus yards downfield, his grade has declined even from where it was last year. If you can't have that level of confidence against the Steelers, I understand. But against the Bengals, I think you've got, if he can play, you've got to give him a chance, because this to me is a get right situation for him. They should be able to operate their passing offense with a lot less pressure on Mayfield. And that should give him a chance to get the confidence back. Because to me, this is as much about injury as it is about mental capability and the ability to feel as though you know the throw is going to be there and you can make it. We've seen Baker make the throws before, his rookie year at Oklahoma. Right now, he just doesn't have the confidence that the throws are going to be there. I'm not sure he feels totally confident in the system. So I think reps will be important. And if he can get them, this would be a place where he can get right. That being said, 3.5, this has come down a lot from where it was before. I was a huge fan of Joe Burrow coming through the back door in that last game. I think 3.5 is a tough one. I would probably lay off.
George Torrey with us. And by the way, George did tweet this out earlier today. The Browns pass blocking grade first, Baker PFF passing grade 29th. So it was not a great day for Baker Mayfield. Injury aside, what I think is finally kind of interesting about that situation, though, George, is the fact that it's the familiarity, right, with Case Keenum, the system, everything like that. We've actually on this show made the comparison. I've called Baker Mayfield Case Keenum and like Matt Schaub because of the system and it maximizing quarterbacks. And like, I thought he had a higher ceiling, but it's not looking like it up to this point.
Yeah, I always have trouble with the whole familiar with the system thing because it's kind of a cop-out. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't believe that your young quarterback can get familiar with the system, then you just got to say so and you've got to like be upfront with that and move on. If you're not going to give Baker the chance, you know, if he's truly hurt, I get it. You sit him. But if the whole thing is, well, he could play, but Case is just more familiar with the system, that's really saying that Baker can't learn the system. And I think you've got to give him a chance to learn it. Stefanski has been a good enough coach so far. I think he's been one of the better coaches, I'd say maybe 5 or 6 in the coach of the year rankings so far, if I were to do them off the top of my head, that they can win these games without Baker playing great. But if you're going to win a Super Bowl, you've got to get him to that point, and you've got to make a decision on him basically this year if you're going to ride with this guy. So you want as large a sample as possible. Case Keenum, I know the Minnesota Miracle, that's not the future of the Cleveland Browns. They have too many pieces here right now not to find out everything they can about Baker.
All right, let's move on to a couple of other results. First off, let's get it out of the way. 42-36, the final score in overtime. Tennessee gets the win. Your thoughts on going for two instead of kicking the extra point? Are you Rich Gannon angry about the fact that they did not, that they decided to forego the extra point and go for two and the game?
No, I'm not. and I was someone that had Houston in the Super Contest. I was in despair, and then I was ecstatic.
You and me both. And
I felt like that was I'm okay with that beat because I thought it was the right play there, and Sean Watson was tremendous in this game. Here's the thing: if you look at the math and you break down the numbers here, it's basically a break even at 50-50. So if you think that the Houston Texans are a little bit better than 50%, and it doesn't always work out this way. A lot of times it's asymmetric, and people struggle with that, and that's why they are not good at analyzing these situations. But this one is pretty nice. It's basically, if you think you're a bit better than 50% on 2-point conversions, then you should go for it. And I know they failed from the 1-yard line with David Johnson runs a few times. I would not run the ball with David Johnson there. You have Deshaun Watson. He's a running threat. I mean, that guy was wide open. You know, maybe throw a pump fake. He jumps up. You complete that pass. And here's the thing. The Titans were absolutely destroying the Houston Texans defense. The Houston Texans defense is the worst part of their team, and it's by a mile. The Titans hadn't punted since the first quarter. So here's the thing. If you kick the PAT, you then are letting Tennessee, you're forcing them to make that 2-point conversion. And they are a good 2-point conversion team, right? They'll have already steamed down the field and scored a touchdown, and then they're going for two. I mean, you don't want to put yourself in that position. You want to take the opportunity to win the game, especially when you're a Texans team that has been, you know, not taking the bull by the horns, right? And kind of paying the price for it here. So I would say that, look, it's pretty much break even if it's 50-50. If I'm the Texans, I believe I have a play that's a little better than 50-50, especially with Deshaun Watson. And the way that defense was playing, I think it's totally defensible. And I'm not just saying that because I was hoping they would go for two and get it.
George, let's stick with the Titans here, though. Now we get the battle of 5-0s that we thought we were going to get a couple weeks ago. Pittsburgh at Tennessee, -1.5, -2 on the Pittsburgh side is a small road chalk, even some 2.5s out there. How for real is Tennessee, and how for real really is Pittsburgh, too? Because I was on the Steelers with you yesterday as well. But you look at the numbers, these aren't exactly dazzling numbers that the Steelers are putting up. It's kind of very workmanlike. Ben, I think I had like 150 passing yards yesterday. Very efficient. Nothing really overly sexy about this offense. It's just been effective, and they've been winning games. So who is, I guess, more for real amongst both of these two teams, or are both of them have some questions to answer even at 5-0?
I think both have questions to be answered. And that is evident in the fact that the way the Titans started the season, we talked about this, right? They didn't cover. They were 3-0. They didn't cover a single game. They come out after the whole COVID elementary school break, and they look like, you know, they took a retreat and found enlightenment on this trip, right? I mean, the past 2 weeks, there is only one quarterback with a PFF passing grade over 90. It's Ryan Tannehill. they were dominant in the passing game in that first half against Houston. That's what led them to victory. And then we saw Derrick Henry putting, you know, people to sleep there. So I'm going to say the Titans are slightly more real. When we guessed the lines on the PFF forecast late last night, early this morning, I had the Titans as a 3-point favorite in this game. I saw that the Steelers were favored. Now it was one last night. I was like, oh man, they're trying to keep us from getting that teaser, you know, getting it out to 7.5. Now it's at 1.5. So to me, the Titans are a little bit of a value here because the Steelers going into that Cleveland game had faced by far the easiest schedule. According to our power rankings, basically their average opponent was 4 points worse than an average team, was the easiest schedule in the NFL. And the Browns with a hurt Mayfield, that to me is not a really quality win. I expect it to happen. So I'm going to do what I think is shrewd, what I think makes me feel sharp, which is I'm all in on the Steelers 1 week, but I'm not too married to it to stay on that bandwagon. The next week, I'm willing to be pragmatic and hop off. So right now at 1.5, I like that as the first part of a teaser leg. I'm not sure you're getting a ton of value, you know, because of the, you know, that line's so short, but maybe the Titans money line as well. To me, they are the more real team out of this too.
Well, let's stick with the thought of legitimacy, the Chicago Bears legitimacy up to this point, because now they have to hit the road, take on the Rams, 6, 5.5 with a total of 46, depending on where you look. I feel comfortable, George, in saying that, like, and again, it's about your level of legitimacy, right? Are the Bears a playoff team? More than likely, yes. Are they a team I take seriously for a Super Bowl title? I would say no. What do you say?
Yeah, I think both these teams have the same questions as well, right? The Rams have only beaten the NFC East. I mean, I don't know if that was a half a win. They got dominated by Kyle Shanahan and half of a quarterback last night, right? Jimmy G doesn't have to throw the ball past the line of scrimmage. And Chicago, Teddy Bridgewater outplayed Nick Foles yesterday at a higher PFF grade. I thought he made more impressive plays. He made plays with his legs too. The Bears won that game because I think beside the Tampa Bay Bucks, the Bears are the most complete defensive team in the NFL. And that means they have a coverage unit that is not fragile. In other words, they don't have a glaring weakness in the coverage unit. That's so important in coverage. We find that basically your third corner is kind of your most pivotal position, right? You can have a strong duo out there at corner, but if you have one guy that sucks, he's going to get attacked and it's going to cost you in coverage. So they have a really strong defense. I think that's what's keeping them around. The Panthers were a nice story, you know, that 3-0 streak, but they're not exactly lighting the world on fire in terms of the guys that they run out there. So I'm with you. I think the Bears have an interesting opportunity here against the Rams, who their defense has always kind of played well against. And Jared Goff looked like he was on a different planet last night. So I think they could look for real again this week, but long-term I'm with you. The record to me is inflated based on how good they are.
George, one of the recurring themes with JBT and I on this program is obviously no more of a league has overreactions from week to week more than the NFL. And this is an interesting spot here on Sunday. San Francisco at New England. New England was -5.5 on the look ahead line at Westgate Superbook. Now you're seeing a -3 and what I would call a week 3 at that, because it's juiced to the 49ers side. So it's -3 even money, +3, -$1.20. 49ers were kind of in that spot where market kind of overreacted to the Rams. And all of a sudden you have that big of a change in a line where the 49ers at one point were getting 3, 3.5 at home. But now you're seeing it on the opposite end. New England loses at home to Denver, only able to score 12 points, 18-12, very ugly game. What do you make of this? Would you be prone to maybe go back to that theory in terms of betting New England small at home against a 49ers team that's obviously going to take the action because they looked impressive on Sunday night?
Exactly. I could not echo that statement more. When we talked about Rams 49ers this past week, I was like, can you please explain to me how this line moves 6 points? Jimmy G was out there with one ankle. Like, he legitimately looked like he hadn't thrown a football before. And that is a huge thing. You've got to pay attention to that. The Patriots have this long layoff. They talk about they weren't on the same page. We've seen them play well before. This movement is not as big as the prior one, but I agree with you. I think it's a little too short here. Now, that being said, Kyle Shanahan is such a good coach that I'm a little wary of this. But I think Belichick's advantage against Jimmy G and what will be still a not so confident team throwing the ball downfield, I think the side that you have to take that has the most value on it is certainly the Patriots. Although I always am just a little, Kyle Shanahan can take, you know, absolute garbage and turn it into greatness basically whenever he wants. And so that always gives me a little bit of pause. The other thing here would be that the Niners defense is getting stronger. We saw that coverage play really well yesterday. right? Jason Verrett is playing as well as any corner in the NFL is. He's allowed a 7.8 passer rating into his coverage. The dude's insane. And now they have Mosley on the other side. So I think this will be one of the better games we'll see to start this season. But if I had to, I'm rolling with Cam Newton.
George Shorey with us. All right, George, we're up against him, man. Thank you very much for the time, as always. We'll talk next week.
Anytime, guys. Enjoy the games tonight.
Thanks, George.
And again, find George's work. PFF Forecast is the podcast. Really good listen for you and everything over at PFF. Okay, we have plenty of football left to get to. We'll come back, and we can take a look at some of the top teaser candidates that we'll see on the board. one of the games that is on there is no longer a candidate, but we can talk about that because we do have some breaking injury news if you weren't with us at the top of this hour. And, of course, the World Series gets started tomorrow. We'll have an in-depth preview on that as the Dodgers about a 215 favorite in the series over the Tampa Bay Rays. And then Drew Martin, college football handicapper, joins us at the bottom of the hour. So make sure you check out everything if you missed out with George at vsin.com/podcast. Until then, we'll be back. Expert guidance with our weekly football betting now. VSIN, the sports betting network, providing all access to everything we offer for the rest of the football season for only $129 for now through the Super Bowl Sunday. You'll get our weekly digital betting guides, the power ratings, predicted scores, consensus picks for the games each week, access to our 24/7 live video stream and daily email updates featuring the best bets from every show, host, and guest. Breaking news, advanced stats, and game previews on VSIN.com, plus our 2020-2021 bowl betting guides. Give yourself an edge this season. Visit VSIN.com/subscribe. Get your football midseason special today. That is VSIN.com/subscribe. All right, Wes Reynolds. It's Monday. That means Wes is here. Breaking news for the Cowboys on defense, huh?
Yeah, some good news. They need all the help they can get since they've given up the most points on average in the league this season, but potentially a help for that is Leighton Vander Esch, Cowboys linebacker, will be active tonight, activated. Obviously, Dak goes to the IR in terms of that roster transaction for those that keep track of these things. So Leighton Vander Esch going to return for Dallas tonight. I think that that could be a very big help. He's one of their best defensive players. And this defense, look, it's struggled. And we've said not only the normal struggles, but the fact that the offense has scored so fast, it puts them on the field a lot of times. So when your offense is that efficient, which Dallas has been, you're going to give up some points, and the defense has struggled in that regard, but they do have Vander Esch back for tonight.
Good news for the Dallas Cowboys, who are now a one-point favorite with a total of 55.5. And the last reminder on that, of course, that the Cowboys did open after the week's worth of action after Dak Prescott's injury as a three-point underdog. So the market really coming in and correcting that number to a certain extent. Okay, so this is what happens when you send stuff in right early and news breaks and whatnot. So we're going to talk about some of the teaser candidates for this weekend that we're going to see. And I think that if everything had held true with the bodies available for the Philadelphia Eagles, these probably were going to be your top teaser candidates. But now that we do have the news that Zach Ertz and Miles Sanders are not only out for this game, but for the foreseeable future, Sanders 1 to 2 weeks, Ertz for, was it 3 to 4 weeks or 4 to 6 weeks, whatever. They will probably not be a teaser candidate considering they're now down to a 3.5-point favorite.
So right.
You can ignore that top option. But I don't think that it's out of the question that these next two, especially considering the way that this line has been moving in Jags to Chargers, that this will, I would think it gets to 7.5. For this spot here on Sunday, regardless, Panthers, Saints, Jags, Chargers, the Saints and the Chargers will be very popular teaser selections this coming week.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know we mentioned that we do like the Jags, even though it's not the 9.5. So you're now seeing 8, 8.5s, even I think a 7.5 at some far away places. But I don't think those are necessarily key numbers. That's not going to scare me off necessarily if I can't get 9 and I have to take 8.5. on the Jaguars because we think that that's a good spot for them. So those are the two obvious ones. And then there's a couple in that category, and we talked about one of them with George at the top of the hour, Pittsburgh, Tennessee. Now all of a sudden you're seeing some 2.5s out there right. with Pittsburgh Lane. You could tease Tennessee up to 8.5 on a 6-point teaser. So that's another candidate, I think. I also think you're looking at perhaps Detroit, Atlanta. It's at that 3. If that gets bet down to 2.5, you could see Detroit get teased up to 8.5. But the obvious ones, at least from the opening lines, include the Saints and the Chargers.
You mentioned, this is getting to, I would assume this is going to stay under 6, but Rams at 6, if that holds at about 6, you'd think you'd see that as well, right? Teasing that down to a pick?
Yeah, you could. And I mentioned, with the Rams in that poor performance, because we had to wait for the game to get final before we could talk about it on the opening right. lines program, since we replay that and don't want outdated information in terms of updates. I said, I kind of alluded to it and tried to dance around it, that the Rams were not looking very good in that Sunday night performance. So that line is going to go down. And you're starting to see it now. It's mostly 5.5 across the board. So at that point, I don't want to be on the Bears here. I think it's the Rams spot. I didn't like what I saw last night, and we thought that they were a little bit fraudulent. That proved to come to fruition and be the case. But now it's getting under 6. I think maybe the Rams are in bettable territory. I could definitely see them betting that down to pick.
Yeah. This is tough, right? Because if you're just looking at these two, this is a case of two teams that are relatively fraudulent, right? Mm-hmm. Facing one another. But the one thing that out of both of these teams, I think the one thing that there's two things that I know that are legitimate, one for each team. The issue is that one is a bigger strength than the other. Aaron Donald is legitimate, what mm-hmm. he is doing for the Rams. He's been absolutely incredible. He's a big reason why, or the reason why, they're near the top of the league in terms of pressures and sacks. But the other is, Chicago is the fourth best team in terms of defensive efficiency. That's real, man. Like, they are legitimately good. And that is enough for a one-dimensional team like the Los Angeles Rams that, like, I can understand the market getting off of the 6 and driving this down. So I wonder how far it goes by the time we get to them kicking off.
Yeah, and that's exactly, if you want to bet the Rams, I think you wait, because I think the Bears are going to take the money this week.
All right, when we come back, World Series, it is set. Tampa Bay Rays, Los Angeles Dodgers. We'll take a look at the series price and props that are available and much more when we return.
And we're back with The Edge.
The Edge broadcasting live from the Indeed.com studio at the South Point Casino. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Learn more at Indeed.com/credit. Jonathan Von Tobel, Wes Reynolds with you here today. All right, World Series is set. I'm excited. Might not be the sexiest matchup on paper, but these are, to me, Wes, these are the two best teams in baseball, and they will face one another for a World Series title. I'm extremely excited about this. Overall series first. So we do have starting pitchers for game one for the Rays, correct?
Mm-hmm.
What do we got?
Yes, we do. We have Tyler Glasnow is scheduled to go game one, and game two will be Blake Snell. We do not have listed Dodgers pitchers as of yet. You got to think Kershaw is going to go in at least one of the first two.
I would assume it would be Bueller Kershaw.
Yes. Right. Yeah, that's what I think that the order would be.
Bueller pitched on what? Did he pitch Saturday?
I think it was it Friday?
Right. Wait, one of those two games. Yeah. Regardless, I'll double check this.
Yeah, because right now, not all of the books have prices available, obviously waiting for the Dodgers pitcher to become official.
Right.
But we're basically seeing for game one kind of in that on market aggregate or average, about 165, minus 165 on the Dodgers, take back 155 in the 150-ish range on the Tampa Bay Rays. And I actually was tweeting this out last night, the famous Zach Galifianakis gif where the math mm-hmm. is like going in his head in Hangover.
By the way, kudos for the proper pronunciation of gif.
Yes. He was doing the math because they're going in the casino and whatnot. So I'm like, I'm trying to figure out my hedge situation on the Rays, what my best angle would be, and had some feedback from the Twitter populace in terms of maybe going with Dodgers exact results, that could be and there you see the prices via BetRivers. Dodgers to win in five games would be $5 plus 500. 4-2 would be plus 350. So I'm kind of trying to gauge that a little bit. I wanted to see the pitching matchup officially before game one, before I did anything.
So you're correct. So Walker Buehler actually did pitch on Saturday. I think it would make that unlikely that he pitches for game one on Tuesday. Kershaw pitched on Thursday. So maybe that opens the door up for a game one start here in 4 days rest in the World Series. And then you follow that up with either Buehler or you go spot start with like a May or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hold off Buehler until a game three. But regardless, I think it's pretty likely that we won't see Buehler for game one here for the Dodgers.
Yeah. Yeah. And some of the shops I know at DraftKings, they're seeing two-way action on this, actually. I believe they opened 175 and it's now down to $1.62. So
really?
That's what, yeah. And I was looking at this because maybe you do get the underdog win in game one and then you, of course, get a better series price on the Dodgers if you're in that position I'm in where I have the Rays in the series, who are the clear underdog. Series prices, by and large, just kind of looking at the market average. Dodgers minus about 210 plus 180 on the take back for Tampa. That's pretty much the consensus price I'm seeing.
You know, and I wonder, too, if we're looking at this series as a whole, because I do have some trepidation here with Los Angeles, only because that lineup was not consistent through a seven-game series or with the Atlanta Braves, right? And what that looks like here against Tampa Bay, who does have, obviously, some very quality pitching. I think there's obviously some weak links, just like Atlanta had, that ultimately bit them when it came to the rotation. It's actually somewhat similar to Atlanta, considering you got two guys who you kind of trust in. I don't know. I haven't liked what I've seen from Snell. For the most part, as of late,
he has regressed a little bit,
right? Sure. And you're not talking about like six innings, five, seven innings. You're talking about five innings at the most for Snell, and then you're coming off of that and getting to the bullpen. But regardless, that is the worry for me when it comes to this Dodgers team is the lineup in terms of consistently hitting really hasn't been there for them for the most part, other than the explosion in what was it, game three when they won 15-3, and then of course the game five win. In which they plated seven runs against the Braves.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, they've been changing the bullpen around. Julio Urias, the hero.
Good move by Roberts, by the way.
Yeah, he did make a good move.
Not going with Jansen, but, like, you know what? Let's throw the starter in there and let's get this out.
Because we were kind of talking over the breaks as that was going on during the opening line show last night. It's like, okay, if they get an extra run here in the eighth and it's a two-run lead, do you go to Jansen? Do you maybe go to Kershaw in this situation? They have done that before, not this season. But, looking at the Braves pitching, they've got their lineup with Glasnow and Snell. And then probably game three, they're going to go with Charlie, my favorite, Morton, who, of course, was great in game seven as the Rays were able to avoid losing that 3-0 lead.
Yeah, so right now we're looking series prices minus 210, plus 180 coming back here. In almost every single shop you're looking at. And did you mention this points bet? I believe one of the first ones to put a price up did it open at about like 175, 180, a little off market, and then ultimately over $2 here.
Right. And with some of the pitching matchups with the Rays, too, I was saying Morton could go game three. It's going to depend, obviously, on how the first couple games play out because then they could go with those opener types. They can go with Yarbrough or somebody like that. So they can obviously flip the script there. In many ways, but I think this is the right matchup. It just seems to me, JVT, the two best teams in baseball. I think the Rays were consistently the best team in the American League. I know a lot of people said, oh, because they beat the Yankees 8-10 in the regular season. Well, they weren't going against the full Yankees with Judge and Stanton and all the injured hitters that they had, but they beat them in the ALDS. So I think the two rightful teams here, I'm actually looking very much forward to this series.
Yes.
Kind of the, I guess, in terms of the market size and in terms of the payroll size, clearly the David against the Goliath there.
So let me ask you this. Give me your ticket. Rip it up. You don't have a futures ticket on the Rays. when you look at a series like this overall, do you want to see what the pitching looks like for game one and how maybe you can kind of guess how the staff will roll out over a six, over a seven game series potentially before you want to make your bet? Like, we're waiting for the Dodgers to see potentially.
That's what I kind of think I would like to do. Yeah. And look, Kevin Cash really a few years ago kind of introduced this to baseball in terms of the Rays going with these openers.
Yeah.
And having these bullpen type games where the opener's going to go an inning and two thirds or two innings, and then you take the starter out. And now everybody, everything's a copycat league. They always say NFL's a copycat league. Well, so is Major League Baseball, because a lot of these other managers are now experimenting with that. I don't know if it's the prevalence of analytics more in baseball. I'm sure that plays a factor into it. But Kevin Cash really introduced this. So if I didn't have the futures ticket, I would be wanting to look at this pitching matchup and then kind of go from there after game one.
Good for you, buddy. What do you got him at again?
I've got the Rays at 22-1.
All right. Look at this. Slept on team, obviously, early on. And by the way, we should note, I talked about this lineup for the Dodgers. The same goes for that Rays lineup, which disappeared, right, when they blew that series lead against mm-hmm. the Astros and forced, obviously we're forced into a game seven. The same goes for them. Like, you have to find some sort of consistent hitting. And I think I told you, obviously sometimes, and I'm guilty of it, you use the cliche timely hitting when it's a lineup that's not exactly dominant, mm-hmm. but still somehow performs. And that was the Rays. You got to find some sort of consistency against a very good rotation you're going to face here for the Dodgers.
Yeah, absolutely. We need our boy Randy, hey, Rosarena, to get going here, because he's really been the gem of the postseason for Tampa Bay.
Yes, indeed. All right. When we come back, college football handicapper Drew Martin's going to be with us. We'll get his thoughts on the upcoming week. He's got some games that he's already looking at. And if we have time, his thoughts, he loves baseball, on this World Series matchup between the Dodgers and the Rays. Last few minutes here on The Edge, wrapping it up. We'll get Drew Martin with us here momentarily. Until then, of course, an update on the games that we will see later tonight, Wes. Just to update the lines, one across the board for the Dallas Cowboys, total of 55.5 for Arizona. News, of course, for the Dallas Cowboys, Leighton Vander Esch healthy, correct?
Yes, absolutely. So he will return. I'll be interested to see if people tease that Dallas up during the week, and if maybe they try to get a little middle action. Most won't, to get real crazy with the Cheese Whiz here, because now you can tease Arizona, obviously, up to 7 mm-hmm. if you're taking a 6-point teaser, and then you're getting Dallas as high as like 8.5 if you did that early in the week. So a big middle opportunity from that regard if you're looking at that.
And then a quick update on the early game, 2:00 for us here on the West Coast, 5.5 the spread here for Kansas City with a total of 55.5. But let's head out. Welcome in Drew Martin at Drew Martin Betts up on Twitter. College football handicapper, just a handicapper and a man of many hats. Drew, good to talk to you, man. Let's start with a little college football, dive right in. App State, Arkansas State. We're getting this on Thursday night. Of course, Arkansas State, last time we saw the Red Wolves, big win, shootout over Georgia State. How are you handling this matchup? I'm looking at App State right now, about 11-point favorite at home.
Yeah, this is a fascinating matchup in the Sun Belt. And like always, JVT, thanks for having me on. Good to see you, buddy. Right here, JVT, it just comes down to power ratings being off from my numbers. App State being, 10.5 or 11 seems to be the highest mark around town here. And my number on Ark State seems to be higher than, I guess, the consensus out there. Last time these two teams played in Boone, Arkansas State, interestingly enough, JVT, went into Boone as about 10-point underdogs and won 40-27. The road team in this series is 3-0. I think a lot is pointing here towards the Red Wolves that have had a tough schedule to date. And talking about App State, all of their COVID issues, the timing, practicing, they just started back up practice last Wednesday. So they should get a full week of practice, but still, that's not something that's really a bet on with these teams with a lot of COVID issues. Plus the fact, you know, App State, their new head coach, first year head coach, after only 1 year of the first year head coach from last season, then he went on to the SEC. I think kind of, even though they have a senior quarterback here with Zach Thomas, we've seen him really struggle and struggle ATS as well. I think App State is a little bit more of a fade opportunity here. I actually like the double digit dog here, JVT, to go on the road in Boone, North Carolina. It does look like nice weather. And you cover the spread. I also would sprinkle a little bit here on the money line, Arkansas State.
Drew, Friday night matchup here in the American Athletic Conference with Tulsa and South Florida. And look, the game got postponed last week, Tulsa against Cincinnati, and Tulsa was taking the money off their win against Central Florida, that big upset they had. They go to South Florida. We're now seeing 10 pretty much across the board. And USF got bet against. They got really steamed against over the weekend against Temple and had a two-point conversion to try to tie that game as the money all came on Temple early in the week. Jeff Scott, former Clemson offensive coordinator, now the leader at South Florida. What do you make of this one? Was that just one good performance of Tulsa, or are we seeing something with this team where they're kind of finally figuring it out? They've been so snake bitten in close games over the years.
Well, I mean, overall with Tulsa, I think Tulsa is very underrated in the betting markets, and it shows with their kind of out the gate performance here. I mean, what against UCF? And against Oklahoma State, they lost to Oklahoma State 16-7, UCF 34-26. I mean, power rankings by the odds makers here, the line's been off by 43 points combined this year. They do not have Tulsa power rated correctly here. They're not priced appropriately. I know they're only 1-1 straight up, but 2-0 against the spread in killing the closing number here. Talking about USF like you were, 0-3 against FBS teams. You brought up the Temple game there. They really haven't been all that competitive, you know, against Cincinnati, only scoring 7 points. I know they covered that game. I just think this Tulsa Hurricane squad is vastly underrated here. And a lot of times in sports betting, like I know you both know, the trend is your friend. And when the market is this far off, a lot of times you can ride this wave and make some serious profits and pad your bankroll. So I really like Tulsa here. And I know they're having to lay 10, but still power ratings wise, I think this number is vastly off. I like the Hurricanes here.
Follow him on Twitter at Drew Martin Betts. All right, Drew. Your Tigers, buddy, it looks like Bo Nix has regressed, and I don't know if he's regressed or if he's just never been this guy, but you're on the road here taking on Ole Miss. Circa opener was 6 in this spot here, and look, Ole Miss coming off a bad spot, right? You do everything you can against Alabama. You ultimately fall short, and then you lose this past weekend. What are you making of this? Because like I mentioned, open 6, now down to 3. Is this a buy low spot for Nix and the Tigers?
You know, JVT, I don't think so. Yeah. I think something's really wrong here in Auburn on the Plains. And talking about Ole Miss, I mean, tough spot, yes. But that offense, it's something I don't want to step in front of, JVT. Yep. And talking about Auburn's offense here, you know, with Gus Malzahn kind of taking a step back in Bo Nix, like you said, regressing a little bit. It's not something in sports betting overall where I like to pick the spot where, yes, this week, the offense is going to turn it around. So until Chad Morris and company can really start dialing it up a little bit better, I'm not really looking to be betting on War Eagle. And Ole Miss on their side of it, I know that defense is very, very weak. But that offense, I think that they bring a pretty powerful punch here. You know, mobility at the quarterback position. And the fact that Lane Kiffin as a play caller, one of the best in the country. And I don't think enough people are really talking about that, what he's able to do offensively here for the Rebels. Now I would look for Auburn to kind of punch it in the end zone a couple times against a pretty weak defense here for Ole Miss. So I do think this 67 total is a little low, but sidewise, I actually like the dog here again, the home dog in Ole Miss. I think the market's got this right, you know, pushing it from Ole Miss catching 5 now down to only 3. I actually think Ole Miss plus 3 is the side here, JVT. And again, you know, underdogs have been great so far in 2020 with everything happened, all the COVID issues, all of that. So if you're liking an underdog in this price range, I'm not going to talk you off of betting at money line either. I would sprinkle a little bit here on Ole Miss plus the big price and plus 3.
The Marshall Thundering Herd now into the top 25 with a 4-0 start. Got a big win over Louisiana Tech, 35-17. Win and cover. Now they get FAU in, and FAU's only had one game. New coach there in Willie Taggart down in Boca Raton. But Marshall's defense has been absolutely lights out through four games, and they opened 13 at Circa Sports yesterday morning, Drew. Now up to 16.5. Is that line move justified, and is it really enough?
Well, it's funny. I mean, some of that money was my money there on the openers at Circa. And I have it really as a fade on FAU. You're right. Only one game so far this season. It's not so much just the one game. You bring up Willie Taggart. I mean, Willie Taggart's ATS record over the last two or three years has been absolutely awful. If you've just been betting against Willie Taggart, you've been making a good amount of money. We just talked about Lane Kiffin leaving, Willie Taggart coming in. Talk about guys that can really dial it up. To guys that I'm actually looking to fade, there's not a bigger change in terms of bet on, bet against head coaching changes as we've gotten in Boca Raton here with the FAU Owls. So FAU is an absolutely fade team for me. And talking about Marshall, you touched on a lot of it there. I mean, they're 4-0 straight up, 4-0 ATS, 3-1 to the over, by the way. The offense isn't all that bad either, but the defense is very good. They beat an App State team, Louisiana Tech as well. And Louisiana Tech's a team that up front, defensive line, offensive line, pretty strong. So being able to go toe-to-toe with them, win and cover, I think shows a lot about this Thundering Herd team. I like Marshall here. I know it's getting bought up a little bit, and you want to be a little bit wary of laying, you know, over two touchdowns, but still, sometimes fading away on FAU, which is 1-0, yes, or 0-1 ATS against that Charlotte team. And to tell you the truth, I thought Charlotte could have won that game straight up. So looking to fade away on FAU. I like Marshall here.
All right, Drew, last one, at least in terms of college football. Let's take a look at Troy because the market moved a little bit on this one as well. Circa opener had Troy is about a 1-point favorite, total of 73.5, upwards of 2.5 here at home against Georgia State. A closer game against Eastern Kentucky, but their other opponents outside of the BYU matchup, they have been rolling. So what do you make of this matchup here again, up 1.5 here at home against Georgia State?
I like Georgia State here, JVT. I think the wrong team is actually favored. This Georgia State team, when you look at their schedule, they played Arkansas State and Louisiana Lafayette in the Sun Belt. And I know Lafayette lost to Coastal Carolina, but really, if they played that game 10 times, I'm not so sure that Lafayette wins that game 6 of the 10. And talking about, you know, just strength of schedule here, Arkansas State, East Carolina, Louisiana, talking about this Georgia State schedule, and straight up just 1-2, ATS 2-1, even though that Ark State game last, it was a nationally televised game back and forth. I thought that could have went either way. I think this Georgia State team power rating wise is a little bit underrated. And talking about Troy, you know, bringing in a new quarterback here, having to replace Caleb Barker, who I thought was a great Sun Belt quarterback last year. I think they've struggled a little bit more than people expected offensively. Yes, they put up big numbers against Eastern Kentucky, Texas State, Middle Tennessee, but all three of those teams aren't in the same, you know, spectrum as this Georgia State team in terms of just go look at the recruiting rankings, what they've been able to do there in the city of Atlanta. Recruiting wise, you're starting to see it production on the field with this Georgia State Panthers team. Not only am I kind of looking to bet them in this spot, both money line and ATS, which I did against Troy. Going forward, I think Georgia State is underrated in the betting markets. In Troy, I just think they're a little bit kind of tough to kind of correctly price here because three of the teams they face are, you know, pretty low on the power rankings, where BYU, you know, they got absolutely crushed. So price-wise, I think Troy is a little bit more difficult to kind of get a grasp on, but Georgia State, an absolute bet on. And Troy's quarterback play, I don't think has been all that great against decent defenses. So, overall, I like the Georgia State Panthers here. That's what I bet personally. And again, JVT, you know, sprinkling a little bit here on the money line underdogs is a way I would go in this Sun Belt matchup as well.
All right, Drew, we're up against it. Thanks a lot for the time, buddy. Appreciate it.
Hey, always fun, JVT. Thanks for having me, buddy.
Yep, you got it. Drew Martin again at Drew Martin Bets. Wes Reynolds one up on Twitter as well. We'll be back here tomorrow on The Edge. Until then, betting across America coming at you.